This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to Your Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
Textual healing.
So the prevailing sentiment for quite some time has been that this summer, the summer of 2021, of course, will be a debaucherous one. Single folks in particular, probably a few newly divorced ones as well, who've spent the last year sort of largely celibate or sitting alone in their cold, dark apartments, such as my own, will be vaccinated and eager to, apparently, according to the narrative online, meet and fuck.
Spit on me, baby. Spit on me.
And, you know, what's interesting is, so social scientists, they have, this isn't just like people kind of, you know, taking the temperature on social media. Social scientists actually have a metric for determining how sexually active they predict the populace will be. Wow. And the way they determine it is by studying Elliot Glazer's movements. So they track him over weeks. They say,
is this really the visual you want to put into our listeners' minds?
How many men? Are they strange and anonymous? How many bushes is he rummaging through?
How many bushes? Elliot passes a bush and he gets a chub.
It's true. But they discovered in studying Elliot that he's off the charts. So they wow. think it's going to be a debauchery summer. So what do you guys think? I mean, obviously, Alan,
Brent, you haven't said the term. You have to say the term.
Oh, what's the term? Oh, hot, the slutty summer or whoring 20s?
Hot vac summer.
How dare you?
Hot vac summer.
Hot vac summer. Sorry. Okay. So everyone's talking about hot vac summer.
Right.
This bitch giving me notes on air. And you know, I don't know. I guess I somewhere in my head, I'm like, I don't think it's going to materialize the way it should.
I think it will be just like a typical summer that we have previously experienced. Like, gay people will be sexual in any capacity that they can be sexual, and queer people, I should say. But I also think, like, the three of us are probably less prone to the more public displays of sexuality that other members of our community may enjoy, like the, I mean, I've done the sex party before. We've done all these things before, but like never
yes,
in like,
you have.
We're not going to like Cozumel at white party. Like,
yeah.
And posting it on Instagram and shit. Like, that's not who we are.
Right.
So we probably will never have a hot girl summer or a hot
guy
summer.
Right. Well, you're in a boring relationship now.
That's ain't going to keep me from having a hot back summer.
Right. Now, what about you, Elliot? What do you think? Do you think you're going to like kind of, sow your seeds? What? How does that? Sow your oats?
Sow your oats. Yeah, I definitely think I at first, like, especially after I had a breakup in the middle of in COVID, I was like, oh my God, like I need intimacy or whatever. And like everyone's talking about the roaring 20s, you know, after everything wraps up.
Yeah, and roaring 20s. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I think at first I was like, oh yeah, like it's going to be all about like free love or whatever. And now as we've gotten out of it a little bit more, that's just kind of died down for me.
I see it happening though.
Like I see it happening, but I'm excited. I'm excited to like go. It's the first time I've ever wanted to go to a bar.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to go to bars and perhaps even clubs.
I'm dying to perform again.
Yes!
I'm dying to perform like inside. I want to do a show inside a bar.
Elliot, will you buy a mesh shirt and start going to clubs again?
Only if you do.
Okay. All right.
I do think it's we should just explain a little bit, because the roaring 20s thing that Elliot mentioned is an interesting thing that I've heard a lot of people talk about.
Yeah.
But it was after the Spanish flu and everything that happened in 1918 and 1919. And then, of course, the roaring 20s happened and it was sort of debauchery. And then, of course, you know, the economy fell apart 10 years later, but still, but it's an interesting reference.
It would be funny if the Roaring, it's a century later, it's like the same thing, but I wonder if the Roaring 20s, like all of a sudden people, it'd be very funny if people got into like jazz now, you know, and like start wearing like pearls. I mean, there are those annoying people who like jazz age lawn festivals and dressing like flappers and stuff. They'll always be around, but.
And you know what? I still don't get jazz.
I don't.
To me, it's just all saxophones, and it's like, that's fine. It's not that I don't respect that it created, I mean, didn't it like create every other like modern genre of music or something.
Yeah.
So like I get it. I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm just saying like I don't fucking
the
get
only
it.
Thing
the
I know about
Burns thing about it. Fuck off.
The only thing I know about jazz is that one time I saw Diana Krall at the Whole Foods in Chelsea.
I love
her. Like, yeah, well you wouldn't in this instance. She was like 8 months pregnant, eating grapes just at Whole Foods and looking like the most angry, uncomfortable. She was pregnant with like twins then. Angry, uncomfortable.
But you'd be uncomfortable too.
Yeah. I would be too, but I would also have Elvis Costello go get me grapes.
Buy you grapes.
You know?
right. No,
how dare you?
Not to segue too far, but like, I'm just curious, does jazz, when you are not a fan of jazz, is it the same way that you're not a fan of like Come From Away in the sense that it's grating on the ear, or you're just like, that's not for me?
Yeah, it's just not for me. I guess I don't see the point of the songs are like, you know, I'm just like, all right, whatever.
I find it soothing. But I want to
see, I want to see a sex party set to jazz. That is just like queer men walking around in like the mesh shirts with like Ella Fitzgerald. Actually, that's what they did at scat parties. They call scat groups Ella because they can have like Facebook groups and
a friend told us
a friend told us I will bleep Elliot saying that.
I think he's open and proud about it.
The Friends of Ella groups are cover for scat, so there are a lot of like lost jazz fans in scat groups.
Oh my god. Although what you describe basically sounds like what I imagine Berlin just is.
Real stinky.
Not even joking.
We're here with Max Jenkins, actor and juggernaut.
First and foremost, because they're going to be confused if you don't tell them off the bat. I'm going to be talking about all sorts of, you know, industry stuff.
You are. I mean, but you've really like made a name for yourself, especially in the last few years in television, between Deborah, I'm talking about the women you've worked with, Deborah Messing.
My God, yes.
Christina Applegate.
And they're all jealous of each other and they all want to be my best friend. And I don't let any of them rest for a minute. They're all on their toes.
Yeah, I mean, most recently you were in the news, you're in the new season of Special as our
you're going to say The Newsroom. I was like,
I did too. I was like, wow.
I know. I thought he was going there too. Wow.
My monologues.
Oh my God. No, but you're on Special with Ryan O'Connell, past guest of ours.
Not a woman.
That's right.
No.
Right. Still a diva. But so that's probably been, I mean, that's gotta be a pretty incredible experience working on a show that's so niche, I guess, in its own way. That
it's so special, to be honest with you. It's really
I
know, special.
It's so hard not to say that. I mean, we were just a bunch of gay besties hanging out and like accidentally making a fucking really good show because Ryan is genius. But also just the fact that he tried to make it for years and then finally did, you know, I mean, I guess that's like truly literally everyone's story in Los Angeles, but nobody was going to make this show for so many years. And the fact that he was like, I'm going to make a fucking show about a disabled man who is sexy. He's fucking sexy. And he has a lot of anal, you know?
Yeah. What's that like? I mean, I've seen people talk about and like pieces about how it's like a pretty, realistic depiction of gay sex for in a way that is sort of not, it's not pornified, it's not hyper sexual even, it feels real and funny and truthful. And what is, I guess, what's it like to be a part of that understanding?
It's so bizarre. I'm just like kind of having sudden acid flashbacks to our premiere because I blacked out when I was watching it, but now suddenly it's coming back to me. me just kind of like twerking on Ryan's dick, essentially.
Right.
But I guess I can speak more to the experience of doing it. I couldn't look at myself, but doing it, it was just fucking great. We're just besties, me and Ryan, and we were naked and taking pictures of each other's butts. We call each other I forget how we put it, but we document each other's butts. We're each other's premier documentarians of each other's butts.
So like checking out moles in case they like change color or something, like you.
Well, mostly trying to obscure any moles or flaws. Right, kind of really make it really nice.
That. Does this still look normal? Is this still hot?
Yeah.
You know I mean, you gotta have friends like that.
Like that to each other quite often, actually.
It's funny because I would say the three of us, the opposite. Alan had sort of an emo phase where he was very like nude a lot online on Instagram, but like Elliot has never seen me shirtless.
I feel like Alan's never really went away. Shirtless. I have seen you shirtless.
When did you see me shirtless?
It was accidental, but it was in Palm Springs.
Okay.
In Palm Springs, you weren't shirtless?
Yeah.
You didn't take off your shirt.
I wore my shirt in the pool in Palm Springs.
Yeah. I think even my straight friends are like scared of me, like scared that I'm trying to hook up with them because I do like to be quite nude.
Yeah.
You are very nude.
I am nude.
Alan's nude too. I feel like Alan, I don't know if you're nude, but you're like, you like to show skin?
I'm very open to body positivity.
Yeah,
but Alan, right. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's less about showing skin for us. It's just we want to be fucking naked. It feels nice.
Yeah, we just want to feel free. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, let that flag fly.
I want
to
be
Draped. Wait, but don't straight guys, like send pictures of their dicks to each other and like ask how this looks, bro?
I do think that some straight men are sending those pics. I've had these conversations with straight men.
Yeah, I've been hearing about this.
Not so much about like in the way that gay men would share pictures, but in this sort of like either comical way or like a different sneak in there. We talked about this with our past guest Sam Kiefer before, where like there's that sort of joking thread where it's
right. There has to be an element of comedy to it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
the dick always has to be funny.
I think
they are inherently hilarious.
When we talk about that stuff as gay men, we inherently, and I think this happens with everybody, when there's all these like when you talk about that kind of thing or when there's like clickbait articles about like you wouldn't believe what straight guys are doing now, you know, in our heads we sort of picture a very homoerotic situation, but then in real life it's like no, these are probably gross people sending like gross pictures of their genitals.
Sit on it in a second.
I'm not saying sit on it. I'm just saying
well,
like,
I guess yes,
yeah,
that's just comedy is the blatant insecurity sort of being flaunted to your friends and they're all like, fuck, dude, I can't believe I'm doing this, man, holy shit.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Well, but I want to bring up before we move on to other dick related topics,
yes,
that before we started recording we had a deep conversation about women, female actors specifically, and we started by talking about some of the women you've worked with, but we were fanning out on like Joan Cusack and, you know, Jennifer Aniston. Now you actually work with some of these women. I mean, these,
so
like,
crazy.
These women who that you must have, like,
can I add another must-see TV diva to the list? I've also worked with Wendy Malick.
I mean,
She's such a queen, and maybe
such
not
the best.
Maybe sometimes forgotten, you know, in the same breath as those other ladies from the 90s, but she is so stunning and such a good actor. Yeah. We did a play together at the Kirk Douglas in Culver City.
I went to the series finale party of Hot in Cleveland, and it was probably, she was so drunk, and it was perhaps the most fun I've ever had. Niecy Nash touched my butt. Oh. It was like,
gorgeous.
It was like my favorite night of my life.
My friend came to the play, Wendy goes, he looked like Liza. And suddenly realized, and I've known my friend for 20 years, I suddenly realized he's identical to Liza Minnelli. Wendy, to kind of unlock that, and I'll show you pictures later.
But what is it like to work with some women that you like, or come across, or just like be in the presence of some women that like you may have idolized growing up, or like you really loved their work for years and years?
I know, it's just, I mean, I'm sure you all have experiences. I don't think I have words, actually, which is challenging because this is a podcast. But no, look, Deborah Messing was okay. Well, I'm working with Christina Applegate on Dead to Me now, and I'm still fucking terrible. I mean, I love her. Actually, I hung out with her last night.
How she doesn't have an Emmy is like disgusting.
Does she not?
She does not have an, she has many nominations, but she does not have an Emmy. She is the younger Jean Smart, if you will. She She's like that actress who is like not appreciated enough.
I wonder if the fact that she doesn't have an Emmy is like, I wonder if that, that adds to the fact that she is so brilliantly deadpan and sardonic. I wonder if that gives her a little bit more of an, you know, it's all, like if she got the Emmy, maybe she would just fucking lose it.
And she was fantastic in Sweet Charity. I saw her in Sweet Charity in New York, and it was, she's just fantastic.
I'll tell you, she was recreating some of her Tony performance for me last night because I begged her.
See, I actually got into a Brent Sullivan style YouTube rabbit hole where it was like, I remembered, because I think this is from watching Dead to Me. I was like, wasn't she in a show on Broadway and it was like a disaster? And then I looked up the old press.
She broke her foot or something.
She broke her, I think she broke her foot, yes. And also the press was like savage to her. And it was
it
like-
It pitted her against her understudy or something?
Yes, yes.
Oh God.
Yeah. And I went, Wall?
Yeah, and I went back and yes, that's right. And I went back and sort of went down this rabbit hole of like, when Christina Applegate was in Sweet Charity and it was like this low-key Broadway disaster. Yeah. But she was great.
Cilento, and Wayne Cilento was not allowed to recreate the original choreography. Well, he wasn't allowed to use any moves that are really iconic from the original choreography. But I was watching those videos recently and I thought he did an amazing job of kind of...
He did. I thought it was a great show.
What's a famous song really... from that show?
Now let me get right to the point.
Oh, wow.
I don't...
And, yeah. And
also, we have to give credit to Kathy Lee Gifford for popularizing in the modern era one song from the show, If They Could See Me Now. Now, she did it out on the Starship Cruise, eating fancy food and doing what they do.
I also think Livin' La Vida Loca was in that show, right?
Yeah, no,
that was the first time that we heard that tune.
So
it's a standard. It was recreated by Ricky.
Right.
Given new
it
life.
Was actually a cover. A lot of people don't know that. So you work with all these women. Do they give you like pieces of advice? Like, because they've been around in this industry for 30 years, which is a longevity that almost no one can sustain. So like, is there like a poise that they have that you like?
Yeah. What did Wendy Malick tell you about getting fucked by Colby Keller in High Maintenance? Like, did she help you with that?
Well, she had a lot of experience with that, so she was really, she was a shoulder to lean on. No, I mean, like, I think when you, as you're asking this question, I'm realizing that it's simply inherent to them. You can't fucking, there are no tips to be had. Yeah. It's just them. Christina, like, truly, she can fucking, she looks at the page and she knows the line just so perfectly. She has a, like, emotional breakdown on every take where she's, like, puddles of tears on the floor and they clean it up after this after each take, flawlessly after each take. And then she's also like very subtly like nudging me to move to my mark because I'm not on my fucking mark. And I just the other day I was like, you know, you don't have to look at those lines, do you? You know, I'm still just like so awkward around her because I'm so obsessed with her. And she goes, yeah, I mean it's like a muscle that I guess I acquired very early on. She's like, it's a muscle.
Yeah.
But she has no idea. Yeah, they don't know how they do it, these women.
In this situation, you're kind of playing a bit of a role reversal. Have you ever said to Christina Applegate, I'm right on top of that, Rose? Like, have you ever gone down that road with Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
I'm going to do it next week, and I can't believe I haven't.
I mean...
So you're shooting Dead to Me
and
right
I'll say
now.
It, like, under my breath. She might say, fuck you. I have to, like, really underplay it so it's not, like, you know, a corny thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have to, do like, be really... kind of amazing with how I how
at
I
craft services.
Mm-hmm. yes. Or wait, when she's asking me to do something for her, which
So you were referencing
I don't know, I'll figure it out.
You were referencing before about enjoying nudity and
do you, Elliot?
No, I'm not I'm fine. I'm okay.
Did you have your shirt off in Palm Springs?
No.
Oh, he'll take his shirt off for no problem. Yeah.
To go swimming.
You have some thirst traps. Like anybody else.
Elliot's
a very fit young man, yes. And he looks great. But
we're gonna have a great group text after this.
He's rolling. Why is he mad at us? We're literally not even making fun of him right now. And he's like
I would
annoyed.
More.
We're like
I
his
think
parents
more.
Yeah, that's true. Go ahead, Elliot.
Sorry.
No, but so like in appreciating nudity, you have to obviously be sex positive. And the scene that you did with Colby Keller in High Maintenance was like a very intense sex scene.
This special scene is even more explicit. It's I really am still reeling from it.
I mean, do you free?
Sorry. Yeah, the Colby Keller was really was something.
Was that? I'm assuming that was the most like intense sex scene you've
I'm
ever.
I'm sort of mad at him still to this day. Can I tell you why?
Yeah.
Because sure. This is a scoop. No, but he did some press after that came out, and he said, "I think my scene partner was nervous." So, first of all, calling me nervous. Second of all, my scene partner, a last name even.
Oh my God,
Jenkins was nervous.
Did you have to wear?
I thought
like,
we had a good time.
Did you have to wear like cock socks for those?
Yes, cock socks always.
Oh, so yes. Weird. So weird.
For all of those.
But
yeah, the balls come out as you you were about to ask me, so I'm telling you. No. Yeah. God, they what can I say? I mean, what was the question, Elliot?
It's just like
Elliot, I'm sorry, real quick. So the people who haven't seen High Maintenance can understand, like when you say it's like an intense sex scene, like what do you mean?
Oh,
Colby
yeah.
is topping Max and it's intense.
It's like it's graphic.
It's graphic as fuck.
Yeah, and it's extended. It's like a couple of minutes.
Got yeah, it. And okay. It's the kind of visual joke is that I'm looking around in awe at his apartment.
Apartment,
it's
right.
So chic.
Yeah, right. And right. You're like texting or something, right? I forget.
I mean,
scene.
That's
yeah.
Essentially I am, but not actually. Yeah. But yes, might as yeah. well.
I mean, my question is just like, isn't how that must be very difficult or scary or I would be, it so sounds so scary.
Well,
to me.
Ever since Colby said that about me, that I was nervous, that his scene partner was nervous, I've just wondered to myself, what was I nervous? You know, because yeah. I kind of just, maybe I was catatonic and sort of slightly catatonic. Maybe I was just kind of sitting like in shocked silence right before we went on. I remember I did a few push-ups, I believe.
Yeah.
We were fully nude, you know. Colby actually I'll tell you about this one. We lost our cock socks because they had thongs on them and we didn't want the strings to show. And so Colby's quite flaccid junk was just wedged. It was like some chewed up chewing gum.
Yeah.
You know. Hot dog.
Colby's one of those people. I've known Colby for a few years. He's one of those people that when you stand next to him, like literally no one else is looking at you. Like nobody's paying any attention to
he's
you.
He's like 8 feet tall. It feels like yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind
of. Does he still do porn
wild.
Or sex work or whatever?
I'm not sure. Whatever.
I don't know what to call it. Is porn bad?
No,
I'll tell you Colby this. He flew directly from our set to go do a Vivian Westwood campaign in Milan. So,
oh wow!
If he's at all as booked as he was when we were working together,
Yeah.
I mean, his Sean Cody scene from way back in the day was like a cultural reset. Like it was like that moment was just a game changer in the life of porn.
Really?
You guys should check. Look it up. I mean, clearly none of you have
debut?
Seen it.
Yeah.
Well, it was like his first porn thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like a big deal that it wasn't a big deal that he was doing it then, but it was sort of like he went on to do much greater, become sort of very big in porn and do things.
Right.
But like that was a moment where like he sort of personified that early Sean Cody model thing. And those scenes were very like he was a clean cut guy. And then all of a sudden he's doing the dirty. And it was a whole moment. Yeah.
He's a very smart guy. He was very disdainful of me because I was excited to read the review for the new Adele album. But I don't know why you would read that.
Oh, wow.
What a strange guy. He sounds very passive aggressive.
He's very elite.
He was a Trumper, right? Wasn't he before Trump or something?
Well, but in the Susan Sarandon way.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, he was like a very left, or he is, I should say. A very left person who wasn't necessarily for Trump, but he was sort of doing the Susan Sarandon thing. You're exactly right.
I still haven't forgiven her, and she's on like a commercial for like a new, like a campaign to get hospitals to show you the prices, which is a great idea. And literally every time she comes on, I'm like, nope, sorry, bitch. I'm not supporting whatever. I'm not giving any money. Fuck you. I mute it because I'm like, nope.
She's also the voice of Tylenol.
She's the voice of Tylenol?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alan,
I love spotting voices.
She doesn't feel like Tylenol to me.
She doesn't.
No, no. She's more Aleve.
Way more Aleve.
She's more. What is it like work? I have to, as I'm rewatching Will and Grace right now, a good friend of mine, Ricky, is a big, big fan of Will and Grace. And so I meant to rewatch it for a long time. And it's so good and it's so funny and it's so like original. Deborah Messing seems like an insane person to work with, but also like a lot of fun.
She's so cool. She was going through a lot. Her mom died right when we started Mysteries of Laura, and it was like crazy that she had to keep working. She like flew out and then flew back immediately, and it was like suddenly we were just like meeting each other, and she was like in the worst moment of her life, but we became best friends. Mm-hmm.
Does she give God, you know,
you guys are asking me about these women, and it's like so hard for me to even. It's like, ask me more like specific questions.
Does she give you Jew pride?
She is such a fucking cool Jew, man, and she is so proud. And she grew up like the only Jew in Rhode Island, and people would throw shit at her house and like knock out her lamppost lights. Wow. And
oh my God.
She's a real one. You know, she's a really loyal friend.
Not me.
Yeah, it turns out. God damn yeah. it. No, she is like, I feel like kind of the stereotype of an actress, an older actress you'd work with would be that they don't have a strong support system around them. But she like has these real friends around her who are just really consistently there. And because of that group of girls and me, it's like she doesn't give a fuck about anything. You know, yeah. That's like kind of what you want in your own life, right? If you have your like four girls or your three girls, mm-hmm. nothing yeah. really.
She's one of those actresses to me that like on the Joan Cusack, sort of Christina Applegate level, that don't get necessarily the respect that they deserve. You know what I mean? Like they're not like thought of in the realm of, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like major actresses that like get a like Allison Janney, for example, who like they keep winning all these awards, they keep doing everything, but they.
I mean, it is so crazy to think of how much time she's been on Will and Grace. Even the new one, what, for two or three seasons?
Yeah,
it's like incredible.
How much time do you have? It's like, I guess I feel like if anything, it would be a whole nother thing to kind of try to forge a new path away from Will and Grace. But then I'm like, why would you even want to? Maybe, you know, but I guess you would want to because you can't top it as a sitcom. You can't do another fucking sitcom. Mm-hmm. So this is purely conjecture. I just talked to her over Marco Polo. I don't know if you guys have that app.
No, what is that?
Yeah, I do. I keep getting, I hate people it. People keep sending me stuff.
I hate it.
I don't understand.
I hate it too, Elliot. I fucking hate it.
Why is she on it?
You have to keep mental track. I feel like I'm getting Alzheimer's because I can't think of anything the person just said in their video.
Yes. Yep.
Brent, it's just a fucking, it's literally, it has no capabilities,
none.
This app.
It's just fuzzy, a walkie-talkie. It's pixely, it's a walkie-talkie. It makes no sense why anybody would use it. And I use it occasionally.
And I use it too.
I use it to get video, but I don't know. Like half the time I don't even respond because I'm just like, I'll do it later. And then I don't
feel
think
that
about
it's
it.
Just shame.
Care.
It's purely shame. And we're just fueled by guilt to respond to the other person.
You need to
ends.
Have an intervention with her and tell her to stop using it.
Well, no, look, this is my fucking gateway to Deborah. I'm not going to lose Marco Polo. Maybe you only want, you know, Marco Polo with your amazing must-see TV actress co-stars because it's an incredible glimpse into their lives. But I was just talking to Deborah, and it's like her, I realized, because she's so happy having a break. I mean, you know, now that the pandemic's over, we can say we're happy having a break now, I guess. But like she has never not worked since she graduated from grad school, and she was the first Harper in Angels in America because they workshopped it at NYU grad.
And oh, wow.
She immediately
I didn't know
did. I know, isn't that wild? And then she, sorry, I'm just obsessed with Deborah Messing. But then she did a pilot, and so this is the first time she's ever not worked. And that kind of hit me, you know, because of course my life is the inverse where this is the first time I've worked, you know.
Do you have a twin? Is I saw this on the internet. Is Nick, the actor Nick Westrate, is that your twin brother?
Oh my God. Wait, where? No, I mean, he is, but he's not biologically. He's one of my good friends. But where was that?
It was on, I think I saw it on IMDb, on his, yours and
no.
his. Yes.
No.
I was like, Max is, first of all, that guy's not Jewish. And second of all.
Got me.
That's not true, right?
He's planting bad information. Nick Westrate is my dear friend. He looks a lot like me. We're actually developing, we think it's a movie. We're still working on it, but we think it's about these gay priest twin brothers who work at a Catholic school in LA. But we just have to play brothers. Anyway, he's brilliant.
Yeah,
and I'm about to spend a week in Woodstock with like my group of boys.
Oh.
I'm really proud of my group of boys. It's half gay, half straight.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun.
It's, wow. That's the group that I think is like always trying.
Who's
they
sharing
think I'm
beds?
Trying to like suck their dicks because I like being naked. Mm-hmm. And they're all like, okay, can you please? You know, I'm like, I'm sorry.
Well, I have to say, I'm looking forward to being on your close friends list on Instagram yes. now. That's going to be
and is Marco Polo as well? Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, and all Marco Polo. We're going to be great DM friends.
I'm just going to be CF. Do you guys do close friends?
I do.
Oh yeah.
Usually for like political things.
Oh sure, yeah. You don't want to reveal your bad politics.
Yeah. No, I mainly just don't want to have I don't want to have conversations with idiots, so I only put political things on close friends.
Because
not to berate anyone listening, but most people are dumb, and I don't want to have that conversation.
And if one of you are from Missouri? Is that right?
I am.
Oh yeah, my dad's from Missouri, so I know the exact people you're talking about when you say that.
Yes. So I keep that close.
Salt of the earth. That's what
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, Matt. We barely covered any ground. This is
right.
Just a chat.
Yeah.
Where can people follow you on the internet?
On Max Jenkins, y'all. Which I'm appropriating y'all because I'm not Southern. But
yeah, from Manhattan.
I love it. Right. Manhattan, close to where Elliot's from.
Mm.
But we were still figuring out our mics. I didn't know we had started.
Oh, yeah. We're on and off. Well, thanks, Max.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks, we really
I love you guys. Okay, if you have any other questions about the actresses, because I feel like I didn't I didn't communicate the essences of the actresses.
Yeah, DM Max about questions about Deborah Messing.
DM me questions. Or Christina or Wendy Malick, primarily. Actually.
Oh, my God. Wendy Malick, I will.
Thank you.
And another thing. So the internet was a buzz this past week because now apparently this one writer is suggesting that there is a new definition for millennials. Now, millennials are defined as people being born between 1980 and 1994. This was a large swath of generations there, and a lot happened in those years. And the writer, Erica, her name is, I think, Dawan?
I think it's just Dawan.
Is it Dwan? Okay, good.
I
kept fucking it up in my head and thinking of different ways I could be saying it. She
You son of a bitch.
I know. I always thought...
Son of a bitch.
I wanted to be like... I kept seeing the N as an M, and I was like, Erica, damn! That's what
it's
I thought I was
reading.
She's
a woman. You can't read women names.
Anyway, she wrote an article on Medium, which is basically... It's not an article, it's a blog post. But she wrote on Medium that there are separating two groups of millennials. There's the... sort of just like regular millennials, which she says are people born in the mid to late 80s to 1994. And then the millennials born between 1980 and sort of mid to late 80s should be called geriatric millennials. She says that these geriatric millennials are comfortable with both analog and digital forms of communication and was the first generation to grow up with technology like a PC in their homes, which is true. I mean, I think we all can agree that that was at least the three of us.
Yeah.
Except for Brent. Brent was alive in the 50s, and he remembers sort of.
Oh.
But
we were a Mac. We were an Apple house.
Were you?
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
We only had Macs, and we had the early Mac.
We had the Block Mac originally,
yes,
but then we
too.
Had the PC later on.
Yeah, we had the Block Mac, and then the iMac
Not
first
us.
Generation, which was horrendous.
We
Not
never had
us.
The iMac.
I was jealous of everybody who had PCs.
But there were.
They worked.
Yeah.
There were a lot of angry Twitter users, mainly, who responded to her article in really aggressive ways, primarily, you know, geriatric millennials.
Yeah.
Who,
and she specified, too, that it's if you're born between 80 and 85, you're a geriatric millennial.
Yeah. Which, I mean, the use of word, well, we'll get to it. But there's one comment that I laughed. I literally had a dramatic reading in my head as I read it. I could actually hear the person saying this. This user wrote, as an older millennial and someone that has friends and family that are older millennials, this is highly offensive. It gets better. This is ageist. I am literally shaking right now. Delete this. Like, can
trembling.
You imagine writing that?
I can't fathom being so unhinged that I become that mad. Over a term like it didn't bother me at all. Geriatric.
I mean,
millennial.
I think the use of the word she could have used a different word. Geriatric makes it seem like you're elderly and feeble. Like it's not a good word.
But they also describe.
How dare you?
They also describe geriatric pregnancy as like pregnancy for women who are in their like 30s.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's all very it's all very respective.
I just it's scientific.
Say, relative, right. I just got to say relative, right. But I have to say about that comment that it's so funny because first of all, Erica Dewan is not reading the comments. Second of all, when this person says delete this, sorry, but there's no world in which you command demanding that they delete this. Yeah. They're going to go, okay, I mean, delete the article.
Okay.
The thing that blows me away,
knows people her age has told me to delete it, and therefore.
And we should say this, too, that Erica is also a geriatric millennial. She was born in the early 80s.
Yeah.
So the thing, my take on it, at least, is I have never, on this podcast and other podcasts, I don't give a fuck about the years and millennials and Gen X. I don't even understand where people fall and shit. Like, I don't get it. But I have found that the modern sort of queer audience, younger queer audience, are obsessed with whatever generation they feel that they belong to.
Yes.
To the point where if you misgeneration them, like similarly to misgendering them, but if you misgeneration them and you lump sort of Gen Xers into the millennial window, they will come at you with a force in the comments and DMs that is unparalleled to other levels of anger. It's insane to me that people
because they
care
don't
about
want to
this
be
as much
as Generation X because it's too old.
I don't understand. I've literally on this podcast, we've done it before where we, you know, someone who's younger, who was born after 1994, we've called a millennial, and like the response has been insane.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and it blows me away.
I was not really a fan. I mean, of course, when I'm like, oh my God, geriatric, like for, it took pause.
It's the wrong word.
It's the wrong word. But I also read it and I thought it was really interesting. I mean, in particular, she points out that, you know, being comfortable with analog and digital, I think is very specifically quite unique to the, to those 5 years.
Yeah.
And it really does make sense because it's if you were born before that or after that, you either had it one way or the other, you know, it really was different. But I think it's an interest. It is sort of an interesting way to frame, you know, the way we experience technology, because something like TikTok, I can find overwhelming, but I don't feel elderly, you know, like it's I could figure it out if I wanted to. Whereas everything else that we've dealt with technologically has felt second nature to me for the most part. Yeah. Except Gmail. Yeah. I was initially afraid
of
Gmail.
Really? Why?
Did it scare you?
Because I was like, wait a minute, what do you mean archive? Like, I don't want a messy mailbox. And I could not understand the
people
idea.
People always comment on, because I was an early adopter of Gmail, and people always comment about how I got that email. I'm not going to say what my email is, but people comment on how I got that email. And I'm always, but now it's actually a problem because it's such a common email thing that I'm getting like receipts from people in like Kentucky who are mistakenly using my very easy email.
Yeah. Right. Well,
you know, here's a weird example. My brother is 5 years older. Well, I guess for the sake of this podcast, he's 10 years older than me. He was born in 78. He was born in 1978. And he told me, I guess I haven't witnessed this, but he told me that he doesn't type. He still hunts and pecks by typing. Yeah, he like uses like his fingers. I mean, presumably he's, I would imagine, still quite fast at it, but like, and I was like, God, is that's interesting. Cause I remember having computer class in sixth grade
it was
excruciating to like take it, but I was like, I feel like this is important. And I feel like that's when I became like a pretty good typist.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ellie.
Just growing up with Apple and growing up with Macs in the house, like they were very user friendly. And so I kind of learned that way and doing a lot of like, you know, educational computer games. But the thing that this article made me think of for I don't know exactly for what reason or another, was such a strong memory of being in high school, early high school. And I was always afraid of, I was always petrified of a girl having a crush on me. and of course it would happen, but I was always trying
of
in my head.
Of course it would happen. That is quite the statement.
Arrogant guy.
Well, of course it would happen. I think a girl had never had a crush on me, not one day.
No, what I'm saying is like inevitably at least one girl is going to find me cute or whatever.
Yeah.
There were a few girls who found me cute, but the thing was I would always be so nervous about the pursuit of it that I would truly, I would obsess and hope that these, and I would try to make it so that these girls didn't think of me. So I would try to erase my footprint. I would avoid them in the hallways, knowing where what their schedules were. And there was this one girl that made me think. I just remembered it so clearly of having an AOL email and having AOL.
Yeah.
And literally being sick to my stomach with the knowledge that this one girl from this like honors chorus in another school got my email because I was too afraid to like say no. And I would check AOL petrified that this girl had emailed me.
Did you just ignore her?
God.
No, because the idea that she even thought of me in any capacity, even remotely sexually, was petrifying
to
me.
So I think that fits into the geriatric millennial moment.
Yeah.
We couldn't afford a computer for like most of my childhood, but I still had access to, like, we always had a computer lab in school, so I always had that element. But recently I had a moment where I found, even with Michael, that he'll FaceTime all the time. Like that's how he talks on the phone. It's just FaceTime. It's constantly FaceTime. And I don't gravitate towards FaceTime. It's like not my natural, like, it's not the first thing I think of. I think of a phone call. And I had a moment recently with my friend Jonathan where we wanted to talk about something. He wanted to FaceTime me, but I was not in a moment to FaceTime at all. I was like not physically ready for a FaceTime. And so I had a phone call and I literally had a moment where I'm like, wait, I'm that era of sort of like, it's still, FaceTime is still a thing that I do on special occasions.
I think the marker, the big generation marker, is not just 80 to 85. I think the generation marker is if you would rather text than call.
Yeah.
If you would rather text than call, then you are older than a geriatric millennial. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Oh, fully.
You are a geriatric millennial or younger. If you would rather call, then you are a geriatric.
Oh, I guess I'm a millennial then because I hate being on the phone. I never want to be on the phone. I would
that's what I'm saying. Text. Sorry. Maybe I said it wrong. If you are a geriatric millennial or younger, then I think you would much rather text than call.
Do you remember the AIM days? And you would add people on AIM. They didn't know you had added them, so you could like read their away messages.
Yeah,
and I still, one of my favorite, like, most excruciating moments in my, like, I guess early, late teens, early 20s was I put this guy on my AIM feed that I thought was cute. I think I saw him on xy.com, which is really dated.
xy.com.
And I put him on, and he had an away message that was, you know, one of these like kind of stupid, like romantic poetry shit. But at the end it was like, you know, something like, you know, is my true love really out there? Is it you? And then it was my screen name. It was my AIM name. And I was like, oh my God, this guy, he must have seen me on like XY or something. He has a crush on me. And so I remember messaging him like, well, here I am, you know, and then like, and I like went to bed, and like in the morning I woke up and he wrote back. He's like, excuse me? And I'm like, that's weird. He's like, he wrote an away message about me. And then like I asked someone at school and they were like, oh, there's a way to create away messages where it will input whoever is reading the away message, it'll input their AIM handle. So you think it's about you, but it's not. And it's
so he was confused that he had played this trick on you? He was confused by that?
No, I was confused because he duped me into like accidentally thinking he was talking about me and he wasn't.
Well, that's annoying.
And I'm still,
that is very annoying. But the AIM, I had one of the most embarrassing moments because of AIM, AOL and AIM. Because like when I switched over from, you know how AOL used to have the profiles you could make?
Yeah,
on AOL, of course.
But then when AIM, you had the away message you could use.
Yeah.
And I had this embarrassment like 10, 15 years after AIM had gone away and I've never used it and whatever. My away message, so my favorite film of all time is Terms of Endearment. Mm. And one of the lines in Terms of Endearment is Shirley MacLaine telling Jack Nicholson that her back door is open. And so like... So I didn't know what that meant for so long. So my AIM message was, my back door is open.
Oh, wow.
for so many years. And I didn't realize it was a bad thing until literally 10 years after. So how many people came across me on AIM thinking I'm a ravenous anal?
Were you like 14 years old?
Yeah, I get. I was like, wow, yeah, I was like 12, so 13, funny. 14, but it was my favorite gosh. Movie, and I love that line.
I used AIM to come out to my friends.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow. I was on the phone with a friend, and I was like, I'm going to tell you something that I can't say on the phone. And
drama.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Wow.
My so friend was like, cringeworthy. I was like, I heard the AIM, like, bling, and then she goes, yeah, I know.
did you put out, because you know you could change the colors of your text in AIM, did you change it to the rainbow when you were like, I'm gay?
And wouldn't have done it then, wouldn't do it now.
I'll see you in a bit. Now, if I don't answer the bell, that means that the back door is open.
The back door is open.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's podcast?
I follow Elliot on Instagram, and I agree with Max. He needs to post more thoughts.
My Aunt Joanne would say, talk about how... forget it. Hot back summer and how, like, you know, your Aunt Marilyn got...
you can't even get it out.
Got her pussy ate after polio died down or something. I don't know. The joke didn't form.
That's great.
I love it nonetheless.
What about Aunt Anne?
Oh, well, my Aunt Anne would say, I didn't really follow that whole Ella Fitzgerald conversation, but let me just say, I am a friend of Ella.
Oh my God. Well, thanks for that. That also took me a second too. Scat. Got it. Ella, yeah. Friends of Ella, that like scatting. Yeah. Got it.
Although, yeah. Did she scat? I don't know if she scat.
Yeah, she was a master scatter.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, she was amazing. Ugh. Yeah. Rest in power.
Yes.
Thanks for my God, Elliot.
Thanks for listening. I'm Elliot. I'm Ella Glazer Gerald.
Oh, wow. I am drunk. Brent, I'm not Sullivan.
And I'm a friend of Ella.
This is off the rails.
But no cursing.
Yeah, no cursing. No.
Just poop talk.
No cursing. You can't reference that Elliot was shirtless at any point anymore. He gets mad. Even though he posts his own pictures, he's like, excuse me. And you're like, oh, wait, no, this. I'm just commenting on a picture you posted. How dare you?
Keeping it in.